listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the October 2021 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Regina King on the cover. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. From Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief. Here's this month's editor's letter. It's been 4 years since Harvey Weinstein's crimes came to light, kickstarting the hashtag MeToo movement, which rippled through industries and institutions from Hollywood to the U.S. women's gymnastics team to the Supreme Court, in some cases leading to convictions and appreciable change, in others to a dispiriting reification of the status quo. In this issue, Nancy Jo Sales reports a story of alleged sexual misconduct at her alma mater, Phillips Exeter Academy. Nancy Jo has written for Vanity Fair for 21 years, such blockbuster pieces as The Suspects Wore Louboutin, which became the basis for her acclaimed book, The Bling Ring, and Sofia Coppola's 2013 film of the same name. Her writing and documentary film work revolve around community, whether she's exploring celebrity subcultures or the self-selecting world of dating apps. She spent years reporting among teenagers and young adults for her book American Girls, experience that gives her the exact right tools to excavate a decades-old story of misplaced trust and murky accusations at a school that, like so many contemporary institutions, is wrestling with a history of crossed lines when it came to dynamics of power. Only Nancy Jo could do justice to this story, for reasons that become clear in the telling, and when she says, while recounting a surreally convoluted series of conversations, that she feels as if she's in a Beckett play, she is not exaggerating. Throughout this theater of the absurd, her voice remains a calm and authoritative presence, asking pointed and poignant questions about whether, ultimately, her voice matters. In fashion, autumn signals new beginnings, even or perhaps especially in our world of delayed reopenings. We could imagine no better cover subject for this month than Regina King, whose performances in front of and behind the camera this past year have marked a new chapter of artistry in a storied career, and who also managed to light up the red carpet time and again when there wasn't even a red carpet to speak of. I was probably not the only person hoping that her triumphant opening of the Oscars broadcast in April was going to sag into a one-woman heist movie. She could have pulled it off. Here, on the occasion of her new movie, The Harder They Fall, she talks with Jesmyn Ward about the decades of work through which she has built not only an iconic career, but a treasured community, and a resplendent portfolio of luminous actors from around the globe reminds us further of the power and range of women on screen at this moment, from Camille Cotin to Rebecca Ferguson to Sandra Oh. Thank you. Here are some of the contributors to the issue. Alexis Chung, in the details. While reporting on the handbag makers of Hermes, Chung gained new appreciation for their craft. The commitment to each piece made those fortunate enough to collect the brand's wares seem less like trophy hunters and more like appreciators of a true artisanal form. Britt Hennemuth, Making Waves, After Hours. I love speaking to people who get to do what they love, says senior West Coast editor Hennemuth, who contributed to the Style portfolio and oversees the Vanities interview each month. It's inspiring to hear an actor's or musician's journey from a dream to their reality. Suleiman Inaya, Aromatic Constructs. Perfume was at first a daunting topic for Inaya, who specializes in writing about architecture. But eventually he saw the craft in fragrance making. It requires, he says, as much precisely honed expertise as it does bold, fertile imagination. Nathan Klein, After Hours. Stylist Klein collaborated with photographer Tom Craig and the actors featured in this issue's portfolio to bring joy and effervescence to the set. One of my favorite moments was watching Sandra Oh blasting Ape Shit by the Carters, says Klein, while quite literally hanging from a chandelier. Prince Jesse, Coin the Terms. Based in Accra, Ghana, Jesse aims to bring audiences into his own reality through his work. I wanted to create something like a wonderland, like a dream, says Jesse of his vibrant photograph for this issue. If you look at it, you will think you are in a different world. Jesmyn Ward, In Her Element. Ward is a 2-time National Book Award winner and author of 5 books, most recently Sing, Unburied Sing, and Navigate Your Stars. She profiled this month's cover star, actor and director Regina King, and found her to be as engaging, frank, and funny in person as she is on screen. making waves. From comedy to drama to musicals, Caitlin Dever has the range, by Brett Hennemuth. Caitlin Dever has been stealing scenes since she was 12, from her powerful turn in Unbelievable to her comedic breakout in Booksmart. She cemented herself as remarkably versatile. Her 2021 slate underlines this. After opening the Toronto International Film Festival with Universal's Dear Evan Hansen, she'll dive into the opioid crisis for the Hulu limited series Dopesick. Before filming her first rom-com opposite George Clooney and Julia Roberts, not too shabby. A self-proclaimed Broadway stan, she's always wanted to do a musical. Dever bonded with Amy Adams, who plays her mother in Evan Hansen, over a mutual love for the band Bread, and is hoping they'll do karaoke together once they're both back in L.A. She shares a best friend with another Evan Hansen comrade, Ben Platt. Beanie Feldstein, Dever's Booksmart co-star, "She was really excited we were going to be working together," says Dever. She and Platt decided to be roommates during the Evan Hansen shoot, where COVID-19 protocols meant splitting their time fully between the film's set and their shared rental. "We were watching Love Island and Selling Sunset every night." In Dever's mind, the movie is the perfect salve for an alienating age. "Making a movie about feeling isolated felt even more impactful during the pandemic," she says. "I have always wanted to be a part of projects that really do start a conversation, and I believe that this film does that and more." She also stars opposite Michael Keaton in Dopesick. Serious as that series is, working with Keaton was another dream come true. He did the Beetlejuice voice for a split second, and I flipped. Her dream dinner party would include Audrey Hepburn, Johnny Cash, Stevie Nicks, and Willie Nelson. She'd like to play Amelia Earhart. Her favorite cocktail is an extra dirty vodka martini. She wants to work with the Coen brothers one day and would like to visit Montana on her next road trip. This fall, she will start working on Ticket to Paradise in Australia. "I'm losing my mind," Dever admits. "Julia Roberts and George Clooney are playing my parents." She hasn't Zoomed them yet because the computer thing might be too nerve-wracking. tastemaker, Ebony L. Haynes, director of 52 Walker, a new Kunsthalle-style gallery under David Zwirner, shares her culture fix. Operation Doomsday, the untimely passing of MF Doom, Daniel Dumille, last October, was very sad for me. He was my favorite conceptual artist, and I have been playing this 1999 album, one of my favorites, regularly ever since. Glitch Feminism, conceived in 2013 and released in book form in 2020, this manifesto by Legacy Russell considers how bodies are viewed and where can we find freedom in spaces that glitch. I'm most excited to see how future generations read this and what considerations around identity have changed. Ziwi on Showtime. I love when black women find a platform for their voices and creative genius to be seen and heard, and everyone should see and hear Ziwi. What else can I say? Ziwi for president. On the Vanity Fair agenda, event, Christian Dior, designer of dreams. The Brooklyn Museum presentation of the Christian Dior Designer of Dreams exhibition is curated by Florence Muller, Avenir Foundation Curator of Textile Art and Fashion at the Denver Art Museum, in collaboration with Matthew Yokoboski, Senior Curator of Fashion and Material Culture, Brooklyn Museum. On view from September 10, 2021 to February 20, 2022. Aromatic Constructs. For Louis Vuitton's latest suite of perfumes, architect Frank Gehry gives shape to the ineffable by Suleiman Anaya, opening photograph by Joanna McClure. Les Etats, a new five-piece collection by Louis Vuitton, puts Frank Gehry's eye for unexpected curves on display. Ever since his limestone and titanium Guggenheim Bilbao revolutionized architecture a quarter century ago, Frank Gehry has imbued concert halls, museums, and towers from New York to Seoul with flickering luminosity and irrepressible kinetic energy. The architect's fascination with the human capacity to feel, whether through music, art, or other pleasures, is evident in many of his buildings. Sweeping overtures to optimism and fantasy that wrap the viewer in a crescendo of unexpected form. Frank creates places that have a spirit and stir a variety of emotions in anyone who enters them, says Jacques Cavalier-Balatru, a longtime Gehry fan and the nose of Louis Vuitton since 2012. It's in the way that light traverses his buildings. You witness something permanent and solid, but also unexpectedly moving. Few people can build like that. Cavalier-Balatru should know, being a builder himself. Great perfumers speak of their creations as constructions, olfactory bodies that are layered to evoke wonder through a blend of intuition and craft. All this makes the latest Louis Vuitton project a meeting of kindred minds. Gehry and the master perfumer have collaborated on a suite of five women's scents called Les Etres. The French term for extract refers to the highest available fragrance concentration. Working from Los Angeles, Gehry designed a sensuous glass bottle, his first ever perfume flacon, featuring an exuberant aluminum cap. Meanwhile, Cavalier-Balatru formulated the extracts at Les Fontaines Parfumées, Vuitton's scent think tank, and nursery in the French perfume capital of Grasse. Gary has designed an exquisite container for the brand once before, the mirage-like home of the Fondation Louis Vuitton in Paris. Cavalier Bellatrix visited the Bois de Boulogne site before the building opened in 2014. Those curved glass shapes and the technique he used to make them were so exceptional. One day I will create a perfume like this, he recalls thinking. 6 years later, the two men found themselves having long transatlantic Zoom calls, talking about how to transmute everything they love about life into their work. I said to him, "You know, Frank, the best perfume in the world is the wind." The Frenchman was thinking of how air and light filter through the billowing glass sheets at the Fondation, an effect Geary intended. Geary, whose creative passion remains undiminished at 92, took on the challenge with characteristic zest, seeing it as a continuation of formal experiments he began in the aughts and took to new heights at the Fondation. When working with large panels of glass, the normal thing would be to avoid anything that would bend it, he explains, speaking cheerfully from his sun-flooded Playa Vista studio. But if you're able to purposely bend glass to its limit, you can change the character of the building and get a feeling. In the photos, Frank Geary at his studio in Los Angeles, his sketch of the sculptural perfume bottle, the Fondation Louis Vuitton in Paris with its billowing glass walls. The same obstinate search for nuance that produces Geary's gently dancing facades, where meticulous planning masquerades as serendipity, informed his bottle for Vuitton. Veering from the symmetrical flacon used in the past, the architect wanted to add sharp edges that offset his design's obliquely feminine contours. His team went through dozens of prototypes and several hundred 3D models before settling on a final version. Geary is famous for doing the same for his buildings. During a tour of his studio, he eagerly showed off models for a raft of projects, from an art center in Arles to fish lamps for a Gagosian show. The resulting vessel was difficult to realize, Geary admits, but ever so worth it. It's a small move, a tiny little effort, but it totally differentiates the result. Much like Geary, Cavalier Bellatrix's work involves an abstract idea that must become reality. Beyond the selection of materials, the perfumer's artistry is to reveal the precise olfactory facets he envisions. For Les Etres, he used natural ingredients from all corners of the planet. Jasmine grandiflorum, the Romane Conti among jasmines, the perfumer says of the grass jewel, was extracted using Cavalier Bellatrix's low-heat method to preserve its most elusive aspects. Calabrian bergamot was retooled for extra zest, while poppies and precious oud made the journey from Peru and Bangladesh, respectively. What's novel in this collection is the way we reworked the natural extract to create a heart, says Cavalier Bellatrix. While the playfully named scents issue the usual top and bass note composition, each one delivers a radiant punch that lingers. In stellar times, musky ambergris is entwined with a leathery jolt. The floral intensity of 10,000 petals fills the air in dancing blossom. The remaining scents run the sensory gamut, with hits of citrus and spice sagging into vanilla and woods. For the cap, Geary conceived what is essentially an autonomous sculptural object, reprising a signature motif. The crinkled element born from accident. Flame-like, it renders the scents uplifting even before the first whiff. Movement again is present, as if the wind had made a stray, wilting bloom awaken. The crumpled form represents happiness. That's what I liked about it and what perfume is about, explains Geary, ever poetic. The expert alliance between Southern California and the French Riviera seems to confirm that beauty lives in subtlety and surprise, in technical finesse suffused with je ne sais quoi. The edges give the bottle a gravitas of something new. Then you top it off with a feeling of joy. Now this from Laura Regensdorf, States of Undress, style-minded fragrances for day to nighty-night. 5 drops of Chanel No. 5. That was Marilyn Monroe's answer in 1952 when asked what she wore to bed. I didn't want to say nude, she demurred, but it's the truth. The actor was a noted fan of the perfume, now celebrating its centennial. Subsequent faces have included Catherine Deneuve, Nicole Kidman, and Marion Cotillard. This fall's fashion-led scents have similar allure. Jasmine and vanilla warm up the new Mueller. Burberry Hero melds cedar and bergamot. Chloé veers sustainable with the rose-tinged Eau de Parfum Naturel. Gucci's latest is heady with gardenia. And Miss Dior marries powdery florals and musky sandalwood. All have stars attached, but we dare not ask whether they follow Monroe's bedtime example. In the illustrations for Burberry Hero, Adam Driver. For Dior, Miss Dior, Natalie Portman. For Gucci, Flora Gorgeous Gardenia, Miley Cyrus. For Mueller, Alien Goddess, Willow Smith. And for Chloe, Eau de Parfum Naturel, Lucy Boynton. coined the terms by Daisy Shaw Ellis, with photograph by Prince Jesse. For this year's Fall Runway, Prada's first menswear collection from creative collaborators Miuccia Prada and Rafe Simons was in close conversation with the women's wear they would show soon after. Oversized coats, a deft layering of clashing prints, bodysuits as underlayers, and the intellectualism characteristic of the brand. But two accessories appeared identically on both runways, brightly hued leather gloves with a built-in coin purse and similarly vivid bags. Vibrant style, double the impact. And in the photo, two of the oversized coats are shown. What's trending? Earthenware. As the days shorten and nights grow cool, embrace items that would be at home on brisk southwest vistas. Lush outerwear in sky blue and desert shades, sunset-hued blush, boots made for walking. In the photo, find tranquility in Santa Fe Modern, contemporary design in the high desert, written by Helen Thompson and photographed by Casey Dunn, out in October from Monticelli. And from the vanities, my stuff. Daydreamer. Nell Diamond, founder and CEO of Hill House Home, likes her heels high, her pizza delivered, and a touch of romance in absolutely everything. Style File. Beloved jewelry brands Brent Neal, Allison Liu, Anita Coe, Irene Newworth. Everyday uniform, Hill House LE nap dress. I wear a nap dress every day. It carries me from 6 a.m. breakfast with my three children, to work Zooms, to running errands around the neighborhood, to dinner with friends. It's my version of jeans. It goes with everything. Go-to shoe, platform heels by Miu Miu. I like really high heels, but only with a platform. It's so much more comfortable. On Beauty, Serum, Isla Beauty Storm Serum, Daily Makeup, NARS Radiant Creamy Concealer in Chantilly, Stila Stay All Day Liquid Liner, Sephora Pencil Eyeliner in Peacock Blue, Benefit Benetint, Psy Beauty Eyelash Curler, Kosas Rosewater Lipstick, Urban Decay Glitter Eyeliner. Before Bed, Dr. Barbara Sturm Rich Cream. At home, flowers, fresh seasonal flowers and Paul Arnault bud vases. Dishware, Laboratorio Paravicini play plates. Recent addition, twin babies. They and their belongings have really taken over the joint. Favorite stationery, Smythson. For pleasure, inspired by paintings by Mary Cassatt. Reading White Teeth by Zadie Smith is my favorite book of all time. Queenie by Candace Cardi Williams. The Runaways by Fatima Bhutto. Watching Arrested Development, again, The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. The menu, to go, Domino's. I order the handmade pan pizza with two ranch dipping sauces and a lava cake. Indulgent drink, Aperol Spritz. Power snack, cheddar cheese. Thank you. Now on to books. Sightlines. Fresh photography collections explore glamour, fame, and quiet moments. This from Madison Reed. In a photo, Nadine Ijouer's debut monograph, Our Own Selves, published by Prestel, showcases editorial shoots and more personal portraits from Jamaica and Lagos, featuring Ijouer's signature jewel-toned color palettes and striking, often androgynous models, a celebration of beauty in its full sweep. In more photos, though Slim Aarons described his photos as attractive people doing attractive things in attractive places, Slim Aarons' style out from Abrams demonstrates that capturing this winsome jet set was an art. In Paul, an intimate decades-long portrait project, photojournalist Harry Benson records the evolution of Paul McCartney, pictured here, from the cute beetle to a venerated solo musician and an earnest family man. McCartney's charisma is evident whether he's focused at the piano or in a moment of repose. To a person, a crop of immersive novels set in churches, deserts, and outer space delves into the weirdness of being human. The Morning Star, a Melancholia-esque star, appears ominously in this dark novel, fit for fans and the Carl of Nausgaard curious alike, translated by Martin Aitken from Penguin Press. Go home, Ricky, debut novelist Gene Quack's wrestling-centric satire unspools issues of race and masculinity, toxic and otherwise, from Overlook Press. Cloud Cuckoo Land, Anthony Doerr's first novel since All the Light We Cannot See, is packed with lush details and a gripping narrative spanning from 15th century Constantinople to a new home planet-seeking spaceship, tied together by a lost Diogenes text from Scribner. Crossroads, come for the Twitter fire starter that is Jonathan Franzen, stay for the funny, sad, unputdownable tapestry of a pastor and his family in the midst of myriad crises of conscience, religion, and otherwise, from Ferrer, Strauss, and Giroux. The Book of Form and Emptiness, Zen studies, environmental catastrophe, and mental health are intertwined in Ruth Ozeki's story of a teen boy who hears voices, his hoarder mother, and a mysterious young performer, from Viking. I love you, but I've chosen darkness. Claire V. Watkins, whose father was a member of the Manson family, has written a beguiling, biting exploration of motherhood and personhood that weaves in rich biographical details and is set in the desert heat of her California and Nevada hometowns, from Riverhead. Bewilderment. Richard Powers turns his gaze to the stars in this devastating follow-up to his Pulitzer Prize-winning The Overstory, as an astrobiologist mourns his wife's recent death while raising his brilliant troubled son, from W.W. Norton. And these synopses were compiled by Keziah Weir. As was this next item, Record Setters. In these new books, three stars put their lives on paper. Phoebe Robinson, Please Don't Sit on My Bed in Your Outside Clothes. Robinson's third Laugh Out Loud essay collection is the first from her new imprint, Tiny Reparations. We are more than trauma, she says, and I plan to be one of many imprints to show that. Stanley Tucci, Taste, My Life Through Food. The actor details his Epicurean life in this memoir with recipes from gallery books, not least a French delicacy shared with Meryl Streep. Her reaction? It does have a bit of the barnyard about it. His? It looks like an effing horse blank. Michaela Coyle, Misfits, A Personal Manifesto. Coyle's affecting first book, Out from Holt, adds a new intro and epilogue to the text of her 2018 MacTaggart lecture, which discusses racism in the film industry and the assault that would inspire I May Destroy You. Moving on to the fairground, with photographs by Landon Nordeman, City Lights. Vanity Fair joins Gagosian director Antoine Sargent, designer and the Real Housewives of New York City star Leah McSweeney, and theater owner Jordan Roth on their evening adventures as New York Comes Back to Life by Dan Adler and Chris Murphy. Social Works, Antoine Sargent's first show as a Gagosian director and curator, features 12 black artists who engage their communities through both art and social practice. These artists belong to communities, Sargent says, and those communities are showing up. An attendee wears a Brandon Blackwood bag. Mutual artist Tizo touched down in front of Rick Lowe's Black Wall Street Journey No. 5. I'm excited about folks immersing themselves, Sargent says. Theaster Gates, whose work is in the show with Thelma Golden, director of the Studio Museum in Harlem. There is this counterculture that is going on in New York, said Leah McSweeney. Didi Fuego does her makeup backstage at pieces during Pride. Leah McSweeney, a star of The Real Housewives of New York City, dances at the packed club. At Village Cigars, McSweeney picks up a jewel, later discarded. At this year's relaunch of Springsteen on Broadway, theater owner Jordan Roth wears Alexander McQueen and his grandmother's purse. Bruce is the person we need to bring us back to life, he says. Roth and his husband, producer Richie Jackson, greet their seatmates, Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg and his husband, Chasten. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.